But no, and it's really great fun because Adam lived here all my life, and Virginia's been here since 1919. She was 11, 9 or 10 when she came here. And so we go to parties, and I see all these guys that I've known since they were little kids.
Yeah.
And then they're gone, and I see their sons and daughters and things like that.
What did Virginia's father do?
He had a lumber mill back east, but then he came out here and he had a garage down at Daddy Andrew down there. It's Obergey's now.
Uh-huh.
We finally sold it. He ran it for years, and then all of a sudden all the guys wanted to retire. and they lived up there on Susan only child too. And let's see. I started graduating about 1925 or 26.
When you were still in high school?
Yeah, we were juniors. And then she graduated in February, and she went to the University of Washington. Because that's the only place we could get in. Standard doesn't take you except in the start of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And Russian's got the quarter system, and they do take it. And so she, when I got married, things were a little rough. And she was, when I think back about what you did then, you know, you didn't have any money, but you didn't need any money. Because we got the depression a little later out here, and also the recovery was a little, because the things in those days, everything was coming from the east, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, those guys got hurt first, and we didn't have any market out here, you know. And so everything had to be shipped out here, and said we got a because we didn't have any population to speak of in comparison to them. We just might have Los Angeles met them all that great, you know, million people in the old basin. But we had two cars. I'm working for General Petroleum and making $80 a month. And we got an apartment. We had an apartment. We paid $20 a month for the apartment. Everything finished, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On 7th Street, still down there. And so she was writing for the Los Angeles Times, and she covered that Hinesville. She had, I think there were 15 more communities that she covered, you know, and she got paid by the inch. And so she had a Hudson Redsky, and in the good months where they could look to buy for the gasoline, I think. And so then February came along, and he had one of the wettest years that the world has ever seen. And they had rain reports in those days for all these little communities and all. She got $1.50 for it. There was money running out of our ears. It was really funny. And the finally got so bad that we couldn't even get over there. So they'd call us and give us a recall, and we'd get the rain report. And these are the only days where they were having 11-15. Yeah, that's 22-50 a day. That puts you in about 5% of their income. And of course, they weren't taking all of their funds. You know,
yeah.
We didn't pay any income tax in those days. And so anyway, I think one of the things that we used to do, the E-Bell Theater used to be a dime. We used to go out on Saturday night. And of course, the group we entertained at home a lot. You know, we made our own fun. We didn't go out.
Yeah.
But Saturday night's a big night. We'd go down to the E-Bell. We'd spend a buck. We'd go to the E-Bell, and of course, we hadn't seen the pictures, so it didn't make any difference. Didn't have other television, you know.
Yeah.
And then we'd go down to the city post club for one drink, and the drinks were 40 cents down there. And the bartender, he'd raise me, and if I even thought about tipping, he'd throw me out of the place. You know? So we could spend a dollar and then we'd dance a little bit. And it was quite a deal when you look back. Hey, you can't even get your car out for a dollar anymore, you know, you got to go parking lot. So sometimes I don't know whether we've improved things any or not. You know, it's all relative. It's just about a bunch of money. But,
you spent a long time at
the
Pacific Coast Club when you were in
high school? Uh-huh, uh-huh. When we were both at the Pacific Coast Club, my father was a member of this club. My father was on the board of directors. And I remember at the time that they were talking about building it. And he came home and he just screamed his eyes out. He lost the battle. But he didn't want to put the powder up. Because he said, you know, if they hadn't put that up, so that's where they lost all of many things from the earthquake and everything. But if they'd put up the third floor, the three floors with the ladder, they would still have one of the finest athletic clubs in the whole time, taking them out of the place. And it was just a shame that they did it. And his argument was that the thing wasn't open to the public, and you got members of the club, but if things get tough, well, then, you can't carry that in. And that's just what happened. I mean. But then Virginia, then she'd been after, she was president of the, but it wasn't the Junior League up there.
Junior Charity League.
She was a Charity League. I think she's the oldest one. I'm trying to remember. Well, Betsy Taubman was before her or after her.
I think Ruth Craig Ron was involved.
Hmm?
Ruth Craig Ron.
Yeah. Ruth was in it, and Betsy, Betty Lewis Bixby. See, I think she was a year after Virginia. And of course, she still goes to those things. And I said, they got a thing coming up. And I said, they have a new coach from their membership meeting. They have a new night, and they don't invite the fellas. I said, what are you guys doing? Because it's fun for her now because she goes and sits. And then when I went in the service, and then my mother was living down at the Sovereign. She had an apartment. She moved down from Glendale. She had an apartment up there. And so I'd been gone about 2 months in Virginia. So I thought she was going out of her mind. So she went over to Cal Ship, and she was going to. She hadn't been typing for me. She could type it. She funked the typist desk. So they had a. So she said, she's going to go back to taking typing lessons. So mother's sitting up in the apartment, and then they call up from the desk and said, "Do you release so-and-so from Cal Ship? We'd like to come up and see." And she says, "It looks like he's already checked his credentials," so she sent him up. And he said that somebody had given him her name. She said, "I'm saying you've been here a long time, and we're setting this thing up, and we need a gal to be in charge of all the launches." And he went on to, and she says, "Well, my daughter's a ex-reporter, she's president of the Charity League, she was president of the sorority, you know, and she's the only one I ever interviewed. 352 ships she was in charge of, but I wasn't gone because she was making more money than I was, and I got to be a major, I think. So we were doing the regal, and she got this gal to take care of my daughter, who was only football, I think, at this time. And so the third they launched these ships whenever the time was right. You know, when the ship was finished, the power went up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And they were running about 22 a month out of there, and I think. And so she was, she had to buy all the pills. She had a charge account with Vitamin C in Los Angeles, and she bought the gifts, and she did all this kind of stuff. And they would do, and Madam Chang Kai Shek was one of the ones in the thing. She'd get gifts from these things. And the one thing I remember, this is before they came out with Thailand stockings and stuff. And Madam Chang Kai Shek, when she got home, sent her 2 dozen stockings. She had no stockings than anybody in the whole world and everything, you know, but little things like that. And then somebody from Poland, and so they'd have all these people. That's the fact that they'd have a drawing, and Rosie the Riveter would be, you know, they'd have people from the yard, and it was all. And they put on the same kind of party for all of them. They had a guest list, I think, of 200 or something like that. And so they would send out all the invitations. Virginia sent all the invitations, and these people would come. And they'd all be at the big luncheon. And then, as soon as she'd bust the bottle, it was a walk over to the blue room. But Virginia, she'd take a Jeep, and she'd get down there. She'd have it all set up. Had a guest book, but everybody signed it. Of course, they'd struggle over there. And so she'd be there as the representative of the company. And she'd... And then, this was Ephraim McLean and Parsons. John McLean used to go out of his mind, because they were all active there at the time, in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be at the party, too. And then Virginia'd go around the room, and here you got 200 people in there. They all know the hostess, but a lot of them know Virginia Kelly before, and she's introducing them. Mm-hmm. And McLean just couldn't understand that. Well, of course, you could do an awful lot with your... Well, you know, there's a lot of memory things that
yeah.
None of us use, but about 4% of our brain when it comes to that part of it. So that was real great. And so I was at Camp Roberts, and when I'd come home for a weekend or something, they would always be a ship. So I used to ride them down. That was the fun. I'd get out on the personal. And Mrs. Minville, she was there that day. And I was standing up on the bottom. There she hit that thing. I could feel it up there. So I get, what was her name?
Greer Garson.
So I was a little late because we went out in the stream a little late. So I came back and I went in and Greer's down there. And she's the jumpy side, was the head engineer. He was a defendant by the Mike Mark, Oklahoma. And she's talking about things, and these guys are standing around. I mean, they're engineers, you know, they built the dam and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, gee, what was he talking about? You know, talking about the ships and everything. And, well, it turned out that she was born. Her father was superintendent of the biggest shipbuilding place in Scotland, and she was there until she was 14 on it, until she was raised there. She knew more about ships than any of the guys that were head of the company on it.
Yeah.
But she was a real good one. But that was a lot of fun. And so then, when I came home, and then they were wrapping things up over there, so she quit, and I figured, well, we're going to, things are good. We've had this Mrs. Lee that had been taken care of as Donna Lee, and so she'd get her off to school at Lowell, and they had plenty of books, you know, they had three books, and then the question of having the staff to find them the food. So Missy is, she's a sweet old girl, and she's working at them, I'm sure, and she knew everybody down there, and she said they were eating like kings, and of course Virginia's taking half her meals over at the yard anyway. And so I got home. I've been home one day, and Virginia's grandmother fell and broke her hip. So they took Missy. And so we were on our own. But Virginia hadn't been to the store, and I certainly hadn't. And so I came down there, digging, a little bit about to starve to death. I ain't going to get anything, you know. And I finally said, well, hell, I'm still on military, so I put my uniform on, and I went down there and geez, I come back, I got box boys with me, you know,
yeah.
They hadn't seen any troops.
Yeah.
But, and we never did get her back. And she's now 92, I think, or something. She lives at the Robinson. Her drives a little car, she was out last week. She got a little Chevrolet she drives. She keeps it in the home savings and loan garage. Because she doesn't drive at night,
uh-huh.
And she doesn't go out on weekends, but she's got this thing to do. But anyway, that was the setup as far as I was concerned.
Well, back in the 30s, I always ask everybody what they were doing when the earthquake hit. That's always...
We were down the beach. On the earthquake?
On the earthquake.
On the earthquake hit, oh, that was quite interesting. This is before Virginia and I were married.
Yeah, 1933.
Yeah, they lived up on at the top of the hill on 2nd Street in a house next to a big brick house up there, Roswell or something. And so I had come down I'd been someplace with Howard Dean, and I had a Ford. I don't know where we'd been. So anyway, I brought him home, and I had a little Ford convertible. And he lived on Park. And I let him out the house, and then he went down to Second Street and making a U-turn. And I just got around like this, and this thing started to shake. And my first thought was that somebody was hitting me from behind.
Mm-hmm.
So being an obnoxious guy, I knew not my head to yell at this bastard, but was there we go. And about that time, we had there's this big crash. We had these ornamental light standards, and they had big lights like this that came out of them, big lights that came out, and a big pointed brass thing. Well, this one crashed off, and it fell over, and it went down through the passenger side, went through my canvas stoppers, didn't slow it down, went down through the seat and the springs, and made a gash about that deep in the floorboards underneath it. Now, if I had been sitting there, he'd have been deader than hell.
Oh,
on So, well, I had that in there, so I got, then I looked out, and there were tracks down the street, down Second Street at that time. And looked like shoe surfing's coming. And I thought, well, I better get the hell out of here. And it was all vacant property over there where the Bank of America is now.
Uh-huh.
So I got out there, and I stood in the middle of the thing, because I figured nothing could fall on me there. Well, that stopped. So then I went up to see if Virginia was all right, and she was. And so then I went on the football and pulled the hell of my kid brothers and stuff. And I went out to the house, we were on Virginia Road then. And so everybody was all right. My little sister, the girl that was Gabby that was taking care of, and said, she was out in front trying to learn to skate. And of course, when Gabby's watching, she said, knock her down, and she couldn't, you know, she thought, she'd been doing pretty good, and all of a sudden, you know, she keeps falling down. Well, my mother was up in Los Angeles at a meeting, and she wasn't driving then, so she had this Scotty that drove for her, and she had a big Buick coupe. And so he'd gone to a picture show, and mother was in this meeting, and he was going to meet her in front of the Hollywood Hotel. And they flash it on the screen in the theater. He wasn't going to meet her for about an hour. He said, okay, she's going to find out about it. And so he gets old, and he's waiting in front of the hotel, and he says, pretty soon, he says, I look down the street, and here comes a car around the corner. It's like this, but the lights are there. He says, here comes Mrs. Davis, and sure enough, so they start out, and of course, the farther down they got, and they got the compliment. And,
yeah.
And of course, they didn't get any reports coming. But here, everything is leveled in Compton. They were meant by the schools. So they come down Long Beach Boulevard. And so they got the barricades up by this thing. So they stopped the car. And so this guy said, you can't go through. And she said, where'd you look on? He's down there regular. She says, Scotty, get over. I'm going to run over this son of a bitch, you know. And he took a look. He says, yes, man, you can go. But we didn't have any damage to speak of. We lost the chimney. We had two chimneys out there. And the Humistons lived next door. And R.A. Campbell, the great Campbell Apartments.
Yeah.
And so he came over and set that house and he said, everything. He crawled under it and everything's fine. So he didn't sleep outside or anything. But then he said, now they're going to, you know, the history of this thing, they're going to have crooks for a long time. I mean, everything. And he says, I wouldn't be building these chimneys probably for a year. Well, the Hummersons lived next door. They had a great big one up the side of their house. I think Mr. Hummerson put up five chimneys.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept peeling off and falling down in the pile. Then the one that did the most damage, we had another earthquake in October. This first one was in March, then one in October. That did more damage to the Los Cerritos house than the first one did.
Mm.
We just happened to be on the right thing.
I've talked to people who said living in Los Cerritos growing up that they rode horses down along the riverbed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that kind of thing?
these problems cross country. Yeah, we had three horses, and we kept them in the stable.
One for each of the boys?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And we kept them in the stable at Pacific and Bixby.
Uh-huh.
We had it there, and the kids used to, the two young ones, they used to come over to Fred's ranch all the time. You know, because we spent practically a beeline to
Palomitas
and everything. And Fred was quite a guy, and the kids used to just love it. And he used to ship these horses in from Arizona, you know.
Yeah.
And God, the kids came there, and they were one. I didn't want to call up a little bit to see what the hell was going on. He said, well, they just left. And the kids came, and this was the first shipment of the young horses they'd gotten. And Fred's out there in the middle. And they're sitting on the fence watching, you know. And he says, which one do you want? And he says, well, we'll get the sorrel over there or something. And they said he was picking them off with the front legs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was quite an athlete. And I grew up with Becky, who was Fred Jr., I think.
Oh.
And there's all this shooting going on. And you know, you finally got the way. You didn't ask why, how anybody else was until you found out what was happening. Because
you mean him on the
Bixby? Mm-hmm. Mostly out there with the girls and their husbands. This was. It was just little petty stuff. But we get a big family. We didn't have that as dynasty or anything like that.
But you have George Bixby, who was living in Los Cerritos. Well, I guess he maybe moved by that time.
Well, now when I got Steve. He was my age. He was in school.
Yeah.
He was coming. He was the youngest of the Haitian. He went there as one of those Steve and there was Dave. And then there was a girl. I don't know what her name was. Not Beatrice, because that is Jonathan's. But,
Was it Philip, too, wasn't it? Or is that...
Yeah. Huh. He was one of George's.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Steve wasn't...
No, what? Steve was...
One of
Joseph's?
No,
it
couldn't
be. No, he was one. Phil was one of Joseph's.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yes.
And he was a nice guy. But then, of course, this article, I don't know what it was in it. Yeah. Was it in the paper from about this thing? It was in the paper? It was not originally Lake Hardy's deal. Did you get that
in
the paper?
Yeah, I got that. I've heard that.
You know, there's somebody's talking about who sold it to. Yeah. Well, I grew up with them, too. They were Indians.
The Gilchrist.
Yeah.
From Oklahoma.
Yeah. God, she was pretty.
I see.
Oh, she took us. Bart and Tommy. Tommy was my age. Bart was my age, and Tommy was a little younger. But we went down and... thought it was 1920 or 22, something like that. They had an eclipse that was going to be 100% in Santa Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
So Juanita took us down, and I remember we stopped at that little lake around 395 and stopped and fished. We just had a great time. Saw the thing. We didn't get way down into town, but we had it. But she was gorgeous. Oh, boy, was she something. And so was he. They're two of the best looking people I've ever seen.
What happened to them after they sold
their house? They went back and won the company.
And what? Okay.
Yeah, they went back and took over. Because they had this oil company in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. You said your dad was also involved in oil a little bit.
Well, he had some property. He wasn't in the drilling or anything like that. He got into one of them. Mm-hmm. He still got some. And...
he had property on the hill?
Mm-hmm. And he still got it. And look at those bandits up there. They've got to be something else again. Of course, everybody's an absentee owner, practically. You know, the bulk of this stuff is owned by... But when you're not on an absentee owner, they just don't live in town.
Yeah.
They live in Long Beach, probably 80% of them. And all those guys are out and stay out of jail, I'll never know.
You wouldn't want to name names, would you?
And most of them are dead now, but they seem to have left a heritage someplace along the line.
Well, so, I've heard that a lot of attorneys in town did quite well drawing up the leases for people because then they would and have the lease in
right, yeah.
percentage.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is the thing. Well, you know, a lot of these, my friends on attorneys, well, they get these little companies, you know, that are starting, hell, they can't pay the attorney. So they take stock, and it hasn't cost them anything to draw up the corporation papers. You know, the girls can do that, and then they check it for accuracy and all that kind of stuff. And they just throw it in the thing, and you don't, you know, they get every once in a while on the thing.
Well, you said you worked for General Petroleum when you got out of Stanford?
Yeah.
What did you do?
Service station.
Oh.
You had to have 2 years of college to get a job in the service station, and I had 4, so I got an advantage on the thing.
Well, how long did you stay in the service station?
Not very long. Until 1934, then I went to work for the Bonzo Company in Los Angeles. And then I went in the service. And then I came back.
You went in the service? Oh, you stayed with Pennzoil during the Depression.
And they had, let's see. So then when I came back in the service, I decided I was going to build another run of garage down there. So I found out there was another run of just even there until this was fine. And so then I went to, I was taking my training at, like, 2 weeks. And I was at Lewis. And I got a call from Virginia, and she said that Boston Kaiser wanted to come to work for them in the Public Relations Department. And so I said, well, can't come back, but you tell them yes, I'd be interested in at least an interview. So I went to work for them, and I worked for them for 13 years. And I finally got to, I was driving 4,000 miles a month, and it was getting worse and worse and worse. And so then I quit and went to work with Chuck Burris, and I've been with him since 1966. This was 53 that I went to work with Boston Kaiser.
What did you major in at Stanford?
Economics.
Okay.
Dad wanted all 4 of us to take law. None of us did.
Mm.
And Bobby went to work for Douglas, and Ed went to work for Lockheed, and they were then when I went in the service, they were never going to go in the service. And so Bobby, he wasn't very enthused with the job that he had at Douglas on the thing. And he volunteered. All 4 of us had members. We were about the last 100 members on the draft. So, I mean, they wouldn't have gotten us yet. But, so I had a letter from Mother, and she says, God, I don't know, Bobby, he sold his car and everything, because he didn't pass the physical examination on account of his eyes. Because they were being rough on the things then, you know. And he'd always worn glasses. And, but that's the only thing that was wrong with him. So, he said, Mother, how about he going to go work at the shipyard, you know? They had all these rules and regulations. We got to release them. And Douglas wouldn't release them to go to work in the shipyard. He said, well, he wasn't going to. So he finally ended up in research and development. He had to work with Douglas.
Yeah.
In the meantime, my little brother had that. He'd gone to. He was at Stanford and came. This was in 1938. And he had one semester to go, and he had one course for his engineering. And he had 2 courses he had to take. I mean, we'd both given at the same time, which meant that he was going to have to come back the following year and go, well, the hell with it, I'll drop out and come back because they had the thing, and he was going to be given at different times in the classroom. So he goes up, and Lockheed was a little bitty camp. They had about 2,000 people, 3,000 or something. And so he went up and he went in and he was waiting to be interviewed. And so he was glad. He said, he's talking to this guy that was sitting next to him, he didn't have it. And this guy was a retired Navy steel worker or something. So finally found out that he goes in and they looked at his record and gave him a job, and he said, "So there's a young fellow out here that I've known for a long time." Gives him a big pitch, and he says, "So he comes in and they get their records out." And they said, "Well, you're trying to get back this time." He gets your engineering degree. He says, "Yeah, that's right." He says, "Well, I'll tell you what. Well, engineers are down a dozen right now on the thing. And the way we've got our thing set up differently than other people have." So he says, I want you to start in the parts department if you go to work." And he said, "Then, if the time ever comes that we think that you need an engineering degree, we'll pay you and send you back to start with them."
Mm-hmm.
So he went into this setup. And so then when they were building the ferry deals and all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
You know, when we were sending ships
in,
like this time, 39. And